From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Open lines this half hour. And later today, investigative mythologist William Henry with a bit of Stardust news. And next hour, for the full program, physicist James McKinney with a view towards space and some strange celestial objects. Some of the news of the day, the Supreme Court let stand Oregon's physician-assisted suicide law, opening the door to many much more laws across the nation for ending the lives of the terminally ill. In a 6-3 vote, the justices ruled that a federal drug law could not be used to prosecute Oregon doctors who prescribed overdoses intended to facilitate the deaths of terminally ill patients. The Bush administration in 2001 sought to go after Oregon doctors who invoked the law, saying that induced suicide was not a legitimate medical purpose. And the benefits of taking aspirin regularly differs now between men and women, reducing the risk of heart attacks in men while reducing the risk of strokes in women. A review of 6 previous studies found regular aspirin lowered women's risk of suffering a stroke by 17% compared to non-users, while not having any effect on their chances of having a heart attack or of dying from cardiovascular disease. Aspirin's potent benefit for men was reducing their chances of a heart attack by a whopping 32%, while having no impact on the risk of stroke or cardiovascular disease. As Israeli diplomats departed for Russia to discuss deep concerns about Iran's nuclear facilities, acting Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said that the Jewish state cannot allow Tehran to acquire nuclear weapons under any circumstances. Iran's Islamic government recently broke seals on its nuclear facilities and said it would resume research for civilian nuclear power purposes. International leaders fear that Iran will use its technology to develop weapons. Israeli officials have said they hope to use diplomacy to defuse any possible nuclear crisis with Iran, and only to use military force as a last resort. An Israeli attack ordered by then-Prime Minister Menachem Begin in 1981 destroyed a nuclear reactor in Iraq. Federal lawsuits have been filed seeking to halt President Bush's domestic eavesdropping program, calling it an illegal and unconstitutional program of electronic eavesdropping on American citizens. The lawsuits accusing Bush of exceeding his constitutional powers were filed in federal court in New York by the Center for Constitutional Rights and in Detroit by the American Civil Liberties Union. It asked the judge to stop the president and government agencies from conducting warrantless surveillance of communications in the United States. James Zadroga spent 16 hours a day toiling in the World Trade Center ruins for about a month, breathing in debris-choked air. Timothy Keller said he coughed up bits of gravel from his lungs after the towers fell on 9/11. Felix Hernandez spent days at the site helping to search for victims. What do they all have in common? All 3 men died in the past 7 months of what their families and colleagues say were persistent respiratory illnesses directly caused by their work at Ground Zero. Some officials say it's too early to draw that conclusion. Doctors running different health screening programs say it will take decades to get a clear picture of the long-term health effects of working at Ground Zero. In Alaska, Augustine volcano erupted again, sending an ash plume 8.5 miles into the air. The eruption lasted for 5 minutes. Tuesday's eruption was likely similar in style to the 6 significant eruptions last week, but according to geologists, a little more energetic. Most of last week's eruptions reached 30,000 feet, or about 5.5 miles. However, a pilot reported one plume at a 10-mile level. Tuesday's eruption was preceded by increased seismic activity at the volcano, located on an uninhabited island about 180 miles southwest of Anchorage. That prompted officials to raise the volcano's threat to red, meaning an eruption was imminent. High winds forced NASA to scrub the launch of an unmanned spacecraft on a 9-year, 3 billion mile voyage to Pluto, the solar system's last unexplored planet, we think. NASA planned to try again on Wednesday to launch the New Horizons probe, although the forecast held a greater chance of thunderstorms, clouds, and gusty winds that could prevent a launch. A successful journey to Pluto would complete an exploration of the planets, started by NASA in the early 1960s with unmanned missions to observe Mars, Mercury, and Venus. The window tightens if they don't get this up. And scientists, by the way, at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston unlocked a canister containing debris from the comet Wild 2. The Stardust space capsule collected the comet dust in 2004 as it swooped past the comet. After a 7-year mission, the capsule parachuted onto Utah's Salt Flats early Sunday. As we reported yesterday, it bounced 3 times in soft mud before coming to rest on its side. The landing chipped off a piece of the capsule's heat shield, meant to protect it as it re-entered Earth, but the capsule and its canister were in good shape otherwise. Researchers will use a minivan-sized machine to analyze some of the dust particles. Groups from around the world will perform preliminary analysis on Stardust's catch. And also yesterday, someone called in and wanted to know about the significance of 3 a.m., something very dark, something very scary there. I had seen this in a video that I had watched a couple weeks ago, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Apparently, the 3 a.m. has special significance as the devil's hour. It's the inversion of 3 p.m., which is called the miracle hour, when Jesus is said to have been crucified. So 3 a.m. is the devil's hour, and that's probably why that caller's friend was getting some very strange things happening. Open lines at least this half of the hour before William Henry comes in. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wildcard line, that's open and ready to go at 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Tanya sent us a picture, by the way, of herself, which Tommy wants to put up on the Digicam next week. She hasn't changed at all, in years. Let's go to the phones. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Hello.
This is Amber from the Star Tribune.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. It's my 40th birthday.
Well, happy birthday, Amber.
Yeah, yay me.
We should get 5 million people to sing to you.
Please don't.
Why? Are you depressed about this?
I am a little bit.
Why?
That bad?
It's just another year. How do you feel?
Yeah.
You feel good?
I was glad to get the roses for my husband.
Well, that's all that matters, isn't it? He cares.
Carnations, actually. He's yelling in the background at any rate.
All right. What's up?
I have a very quick story.
Okay.
Myself and a friend, Cindy, when we were young, had a very odd experience that I'm not exactly sure what it was. We lived on a block that if you walked the perimeter of the block, it was approximately a mile, and in the middle of the block was a horse pasture, and the horses belonged to a friend of mine. So one night, my friend Cindy and I had gone for a walk, as I said, and we were walking past a house that had been vacated. At that time, I think we were about 12 or 13 years old, so I would say maybe 5 years prior.
That's a long time.
Okay. Yeah. And as we were walking up the road, this house that I'm speaking of was set entirely alone, and right behind it is Interstate 80. And there were no trees or anything. The house was fairly foreboding, just because it had been abandoned. And
Clear shot to the interstate, though. You could probably see it from the interstate, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And actually, I remember, I don't know if you remember, but the Pope had done a trip through the Midwest, and I remember Interstate 80 had been entirely shut down, and nobody was, you know, allowed to drive on the interstate
right.
or anything.
Oh, yeah. I remember he went through St. Louis at that time.
Right. So it was approximately that time frame. Anyway, so Cindy and I were walking up what was 50th Avenue, and we came close to the driveway of this house, and we saw something in the front yard. The whole house was a shambles. There was, of course, it was dark because nobody had lived there.
It looked like the Addams Family house.
It did, kind of. It wasn't as ornate as the Addams Family house, but it was as maybe spooky as
Well, what did you see in the front yard?
Well, as we walked closer, we saw there were what looked like bags of things, which later, the next day we found out were bags of clothes. But there was something that looked like a box, and next to it stood a little guy.
A little guy?
Yes. That I would say, all right, so.
Like a little gnome?
Well, he was masculine appearing, bipedal, greenish faced, and he looked evil.
Like a little evil leprechaun.
Yeah. Well, I'd say more like a goblin. That's what we thought at the time.
Well, what was he doing?
He was just standing there staring at us. And literally, we couldn't see his eyes. But, and I can't speak for Cindy, but I know that he was looking at us.
Did he have sharp teeth?
Couldn't see any teeth.
Did he come after you?
No. But we started stepping closer to him.
That's pretty brave for little 12-year-old girls.
Well, neither one of us was breathing, and we weren't sure what we were seeing. So we started both saying back and forth, that's a coffin, and
Well, how close did you get to him?
Within 50 feet, I would guess.
Did he ever run away?
The weird thing is, he climbed into this, what we were saying at the time was a coffin, but it was probably a dang box. He climbed into this box, and we took off running through the horse field to my backyard. The next day, because it was a friend of ours, we rode a couple of horses over to the yard, and the bags were still there, and they were full of clothes, and there was a box there, and there was a hole right next to the box that went down into an angle. We put a broomstick down in it.
How far down? It went all the way through?
No. I would say it sunk maybe 2 feet, and we could kind of angle it and tell that it went off to, like, a very sharp corner.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, maybe it was a portal to something, but pretty brave for two little girls. I'm not sure it was a bright thing to do, whatever the creature might have been. Thanks. Happy birthday again. First-time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
I sure can. More so than you can hear me. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Andy in Colorado Springs.
Hi, Andy. Welcome to the show.
I have to say, you have the coolest job in the world.
It's not all bad.
I had
no complaints.
I don't always get to catch a show, so I had two quick questions for you.
Okay.
Have you ever done a show on the Philadelphia Experiment or plan to?
Many, many, many. Probably three. We always do a few every couple of years. The last one I did was with one of the people on the Philadelphia Experiment, Al Bielek, who's in his 80s now. He has been pretty sick lately. I'm not so sure he's got the stamina to do another show, but we have done them, and we probably still will.
Okay, that's my favorite subject in the world.
Yeah, it's a neat story.
The other quick question was, I didn't know if you've done the Illuminati show yet, the unannounced one?
No.
Oh, okay.
I have
I'll
not.
Keep my ears open.
I will not announce it when I do it, but it is coming. soon enough. Speaking of strange things, we're going to unravel a few things with Alex Jones tomorrow, by the way. Lots of topics, including some new video he's got from the Bohemian Grove. He's pretty excited about that. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome. Hello.
Hey, this is Thomas from Middlesboro, Kentucky.
Hello, Thomas.
How you doing tonight, George?
Good.
Love your show. I listen to it every night. I got a question. You had a guy on the show a couple of months ago, Tom something, said he had captured a couple of Bigfoots.
You sure this wasn't the replay we had this weekend?
No, this was a couple of months ago, I believe.
We've had a Colm Kelleher on the program, but he has not captured Bigfoot. And then we had a Lauren Coleman, who's a cryptozoologist. Maybe you're thinking of Tom Biscardi.
That's him.
Yeah, that's it. Tom was going to the hinterlands of Northern California, where he claims he was going to find a Bigfoot, and apparently he did not find a Bigfoot. He thought they had one captured, and it was a mess because he blames another group up there that told him they had one. It's a long story, but no Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sure appreciate it and love your show, and keep a good work up.
Okay. Time for a few more. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Hey, this is Mike. I'm down here around the world's famous beach.
South Beach?
Daytona.
Ah, pretty close.
Yeah, you're close. I wanted to ask you about... I've had an experience about 30 years ago, and maybe you can help me out with this. I was with my girlfriend. We were coming home. We crossed over Interstate, I think it was the Eisenhower Expressway on the west side of Chicago.
Right.
And my girlfriend said to me, she said, look, there's somebody walking down here on the interstate. So I sat there for a couple minutes. We watched, and these two individuals, I don't know what they were stepping like, right out in front of the lanes.
Oh.
The cars weren't swerving. They weren't blowing their horns. Nothing.
And these people were like oblivious to traffic.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. So we turned, went down the side road and got on the interstate, drove down to where they were at, and they were standing in the middle of the interstate. So we're sitting on the shoulder watching them, and they started walking toward the car. And the cars were coming by. This is like about 11 o'clock at night. And they had on like black with silver bands or shiny rings or around their joints. And we don't know what the heck they were. So they started approaching the car. They got within about 5 feet of the car, and I just took off.
Were they scary looking people?
I couldn't see their faces. They had on like hoods or something like that.
Yeah, that's weird. You know, I saw a couple years ago on the expressway at about 2 in the morning, I saw a girl get out of her car, obviously fighting with her boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
and she started to lie down on the freeway. I mean, and it's pitch blackout. And I'm, you know, and I'm, I call the police. I mean, I zoom past them, and I went, this is crazy. Someone's going to run right over her. Yeah, I don't know if she was, you know, this was a dare, or if they were drunk, or what was wrong with them. But, you know, I called the cops, and I assume they showed up. I hope they did, because let me tell you, if you weren't aware of what was going on, and I saw the car on the side of the road first, so I always slowed down, you would have gone right over her.
Well, there was, as we sat there, then we seen a couple more of them walking off the median, in the median of the road coming at us, and then I took off, and then I went back, got off the interstate, went back down about 8 blocks. There was a state trooper sitting in the gas station there, and we pulled in there and said, there's some people walking out there on the middle of the interstate. They're going to get hurt. So the cop jumped in the car. We followed him. We went down there to where we seen him at, and there was nobody there.
You'll find out that maybe a bus broke for a heavy metal band, and they were hoofing it.
I don't know. Nobody else seen them.
That's strange.
Nobody was blowing a horn. Nobody was swerving. It was just...
And they had that very gothic look to them. too. That's weird. Hey, thanks. It's William Henry time in just a moment. If you need to email me, that's simple. It's george@coasttocoastam.com. Don't forget, those of you who have cable, who have not seen the Predictions television show, you'll be able to get it tomorrow. That's at www.predictions.tv. It'll tell you all about your cable outlet in February 2nd. Those of you in Canada can see it on cable. And as of right now, those of you who have Dish or DirecTV and you didn't have an opportunity to see the program, you can now go to www.predictions.tv and see the program right now. I guess anybody can, quite frankly. You can do that right now on predictions.tv. Well, here's some value for you. Have you been curious about StreamLink, our subscription service? Well, we're happy to announce we're kicking off 2006 with a free weekend for you to try out that truly remarkable StreamLink system. The free weekend will run this Friday through Sunday, the 22nd. StreamLink is a treasure trove for any Coast to Coast AM fan. It allows you to listen to and collect the last 3 months' worth of shows for just pennies a day. You can download and burn MP3s of any of the last 90 days of shows. You know, in the past, Coast to Coast used to sell tapes of programs, and I think they went for $25 to $30 a tape. I'm talking about for pennies a day now, you can record 90 days' worth of shows through this system. The package also includes weekly classic shows from the vaults, permanent audio clips from all shows, the dynamic Coast Writers message board, and live chat sessions with me. That'll make you go rushing to the phone, won't it? So mark your calendars for this Friday, January 20th, and get ready to experience the fun and terrific value of StreamLink. Check out coasttocoastam.com starting right now for further details about our free weekend. William Henry is an investigative mythologist, an author of more than 12 books. He keeps pumping them out on ancient mythology and neo-archaeology with a Stargate kind of twist. By applying the latest theories in science and consciousness to ancient myths of the gates of the Illumined Gods, including Sumerian, Egyptian, and Holy Grail gateway myths, he hopes to uncover the secrets guarded by such groups as the Illuminati. His latest DVD, Anointing of the Dove, links recent discoveries about the Milky Way with prophecy that tells of the awakening of a higher consciousness. We're bringing William in today because of this incredible story of Project Stardust, and William has his investigative mythologist twist to this. Hello, William. How are you?
Terrific, George. Thanks so much for having me on.
Kind of different to get you in for just a short bit here.
I know. It was a nice surprise. I really, really appreciate it. It's great to talk with you.
What did you spot about Project Stardust that got you so interested?
Well, right off the bat, and I had first heard about the project several years ago when Sir Lawrence Gardner brought it to my attention in relation to some of the latest thinking on what the Holy Grail might be about, what this whole idea of the hidden manna may be about. And it was he who pointed to Stardust and this project that NASA had initiated several years ago, actually in 1999, to collect these fine dust grains of Stardust and bring them back to Earth in hopes of answering fundamental questions about who we are and where we come from. And it became immediately apparent that if this project is successful, and it appears that it's well on its way to being successful, that it's going to change the way that we think about our origins.
Richard C. Hoagland's very concerned that we've got an Andromeda strain here because he says we don't know what we've collected. We don't know if we've collected some kind of virus, some biological thing. We have no idea. Do you share that?
Well, I certainly keep an eye on that. That's wise. In fact, the arrival of the Stardust cargo in Houston at Ellington and the delivery by the road to the Johnson Space Center were off limits to the news media today, and are, of course, off limits to the general public, in that it's presumed that they were going to open the cargo today in an environment that they are quoting is 100 times more sterile than an operating room. So most certainly they are reporting major precautions are being taken with this, and he's right. We're not exactly sure what it is. I actually had an interview. I interviewed Dr. Don Brownlee, who's NASA's lead investigator on Stardust, and I had posed that very question to him, and he didn't seem at all concerned about it. So he's an astrobiologist. He certainly knows the risks involved here and didn't share a huge concern on that question.
Well, you know, William, 8 tons of space dust falls on the planet every day. 8 tons. You know, some of it burned up, some of it somehow leaks through and gets into the atmosphere. When we have these various diseases and plagues on the planet, we really don't know what causes it sometimes. Who knows whether some of this debris that comes in from outer space, maybe they do carry these very strange viruses.
Well, and that's the real question here, because scientists used to think that they could explain the origin of life on Earth solely in terms of chemical events that happened on Earth's surface billions of years ago. And they assumed along with that the primeval chemicals formed the large molecules such as amino acids and the proteins and so on. But they've realized that for various technical reasons that Earth's primitive surface might not have been the ideal spot. And so now scientists are claiming or speculating that the original building blocks of life formed via chemical processes inside of what they describe as vast clouds of life just floating around in the galaxy that may have indeed come to Earth. And this is revolutionary. I mean, one thing is clear to me. Stardust is here at this time for a very profound reason. And we can't say for sure if it's because it's going to answer questions about the intelligent design debate or because, as I think, we are in a season of prophecy. And in my view, we can link the white stone, these pristine white stones that are carried by Stardust with the stone with the new name written upon it, spoken of in the book of Revelation.
Well, let's get into that mythology because, and I love that name, by the way, Stardust, doesn't it? It just sounds so twinkly and mystical.
It sounds so 70s, right? We are Stardust. We are golden. We are this stuff. I mean, that's the fundamental point, is that we are made of this stuff. We are Stardust.
Well, you know what? You are absolutely right. And I think if you stop to think about it for 1 second, this material that we've collected, that we've brought back to this planet, includes the material that made us. And that's pretty mind-boggling when you think about it.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, again, to reference my conversation with Dr. Brownlee, the point that he kept emphasizing was that we had to go get this star stuff. It wasn't just going to come to us. And while tons of it does come onto the Earth every day, it's extremely difficult to find. And he had been scouring the oceans for it as well as the deserts looking for it. But again, the point is we had to go get this. And in my view, what that means is that we had to have the right stuff as a race in order to go get this from the stars and to retrieve the profound secrets that these dust particles contain. And the message that Stardust primarily delivered to me is we do have the right stuff. We've got this in our lab today.
You know, William, the Stardust that is here and the entire mission, you say, could have incredible implications on astrobiology. Explain that.
Well, it goes to the statement I made a moment ago that scientists are now looking for the building blocks of life as forming in the stars and in space rather than right here on Earth. I mean, literally what these particles are they're an ancient hall of records that we've accessed. Each particle is, in fact, an ancient library. And as we learn to view the contents of those particles, it's, as I describe it, an anointing of new knowledge that is occurring.
Do you think if they find some kind of life, bacterial life, or any kind of organism in this stardust, do you think they'll tell us?
Well, that's the primary question, isn't it? I mean, the veil of secrecy is already been laid over this. I asked again Dr. Brownlee if NASA had secret projects attached to it. He didn't have a comment on that. And so
he didn't deny it.
He didn't deny it, but he didn't say straight up, hey, that there is a secret, which you know there must be.
Well, you know what the military does when they don't want to lie, they say we can we can't confirm or deny.
That's right. But, you know, to me, this is another example here of how it's getting harder and harder to deny that our science and, in fact, our world is moving at a faster pace towards something that maybe we really can't fathom or define. And it would be just more than a crime if such knowledge as we're describing here, knowledge of life elsewhere, that sort of thing, were to be revealed because of this project. If they don't reveal that to us, well, what is that saying about where we're at as a species?
They said that's going to take about 6 months before they reveal anything about the tests. I don't know. I wish we could get them a little sooner than that.
Well, you know, they've got 150 to 180 scientists lined up around the world. They've got a really cool project called Stardust at Home, where they're inviting individuals to search for the tracks of these particles as they hit the aerogel, the stuff that they created to collect these particles. So I think that what we're going to see is that this project is going to stay in the news for a long time, and I would expect sometime between the next 9 months and probably 18 months is when we're really going to start to see the results.
You know, this debris is embedded in what is called aerogel. It's a substance about an inch thick, transparent, light as a feather, can withstand extreme heat. It's very fragile, however. And apparently what happens is this stardust, which was traveling at about 150,000 miles an hour, smashes and burrows its way about a half an inch into this clear collection material, and that's where they've got it, and then they somehow extract it.
Right. I mean, that aerogel, I saw it on TV the other day, and Lou Dobbs held a little cube of it in his hand, and it's beautiful. It's blue. It looks like liquid smoke. In fact, that's how they described it. It's better than 98% air. And it's just mysterious stuff in and of itself, let alone the purpose that it was designed for.
Sounds like it's that stuff they use on those commercials for they put in your shoes. Doesn't
right.
it?
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. You said it was blue.
Well, actually, I've heard they're using it to make contact lenses, too.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, modern science. When you were talking with Brownlee, I mean, he is, I think, wasn't he the father of this project?
That's right. For over 20 years, Dr. Brownlee and his colleagues have envisioned this. As I mentioned, they've created ways of raking particles off the ocean floor and sawed them in the desert, but the ultimate aim was to get pristine particles from deep space, and that's what this project was designed to do.
Did he tell you specifically, William, what they expect to find, how they're going to analyze dust?
Well, they've got particle accelerators lined up. They've got, at Florida State, they've got investigators waiting there in what's called the National High Magnetic Field Laboratory, which is in Tallahassee. So they've got various methods lined up, and we'll just have to wait and see what their results are.
What do you think they're looking for?
Well, again, they're looking for evidence that of these vast clouds of dust and gas that sweep through the galaxy.
I mean, do they simply, I mean, I don't think they're doing this to tell us what the makeup of a comet is. You know, we're moving ahead, and, you know, we've got various theories on that.
Well,
I think there's more here.
You're right. I mean, every time I look at a news report on it or read one of the quotes, you've got one of the scientists waxing poetic about how this is where we come from and this sort of thing. And then you've also got the statement that this is the first time that particles such as this have been brought back. I mean, again, and they fall on Earth all the time, and they think some of these particles come from comets, but they don't know that for sure. So now with Stardust, they'll be able to examine them and compare them and actually answer that question.
They're also talking that this material could be older than the sun itself, which to me then makes it sound like it came from outside of the solar system.
Well, they were supposed to have been coming from the direction of the galactic center. And in fact, that's one of the questions I asked Dr. Brownlee. And by the way, the interview can be heard on unknowncountry.com. And I asked him, I said, there's a lot of talk about Dr. Paul LaViolette's theory about a galactic superwind getting ready to turn Earth into a cosmic hockey puck. And he was totally familiar with the project. And I asked him, I said, is one of the purposes of Stardust to validate if one of these galactic superwave events is underway? And he said, no. So I was impressed that he was aware of Dr. LaViolette's theory, but it looks like Stardust isn't part, or at least what he was telling me, Stardust isn't designed to prove or disprove that theory.
I'll tell you one thing. I'm so impressed with our ability as people to come up with this kind of technology and to do what we're doing. I mean, to capture Stardust and bring it back to us. You know, the Japanese, unfortunately, unsuccessful in being able to bring back what we needed from its probes. But the fact that we're doing these incredible things with machines, William, tells you about the human mind, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I compare this project with that prophecy in the book of Revelation, where it says, to him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna, and will give him a white stone, and in the stone a new name written. In order to achieve this feat, we had to overcome tremendous obstacles, evolutionary forces. And I believe that one reason that Stardust amazes us so much was because it signals a graduation of sorts for the human race.
Do you think it also signals the beginning of prophecy, of revelation?
Well, yes, I do, George. I absolutely think we're in a season of prophecy right now. I've been keeping a close eye on, of course, the situation in Iran. We all know that back in the book of Ezekiel, we read in chapters 36 and 37, where it foretells the dramatic rebirth of the modern state of Israel in the last days of history. Then chapters 38 and 39 of Ezekiel speak of a dictator who would one day take over what prophecy watchers think of as Russia, who would form an alliance with Iran and the radical Islamic world and take up arms against the modern state of Israel. Does that sound familiar?
It sure does.
I mean, that's exactly what we're in right now, and that's why I was really thrilled that you would want to take a few minutes to talk about this tonight, because I think that Stardust plays into that scenario. I think if we are in this season of prophecy, we're not just looking at some of the downside of it, that in fact there is an upside to this season as well. And focusing our intention and our energy and emotion on what we do want to have happen as a species is far more important right now than putting our energy and emotion on what we don't want to have happen.
Will Dr. Brownlee give you inside information as this investigation and research continues into the probing of the Stardust?
Well, I feel like I've struck up a relationship with him. He said that during our interview that he wanted to continue our conversation. He was intrigued by some of the questions that I asked him, things that obviously had not been asked him before about the mythic significance of his work and what NASA is doing, and even some of the spiritual ideas that are unfolded within this project. So I definitely plan on keeping in touch with him, and will be happy to report on our future conversations.
You call this sort of in a type of hall of records. How come?
Well, because this is a statement that comes from Brownlee and others involved in the project, where they literally view each of these cosmic dust particles as a whole library in and of itself. And so I'm thinking, well, if we've collected a collection of them, that this is, in fact, an opening of a hall of records, so to speak, of a opening of new vistas in our imagination, as well as hard science that's going to present tremendous knowledge, as well as potentially, I think, amazing gifts.
When I was a kid, I would always remember those great movies or stories where, you know, the fairy godmother would toss stardust at you.
You know, and that's funny, because Brownlee actually said, as the craft was streaming across the Utah night, he said it to him, it looked like a magic wand. When I read that, I cracked up, because, you know, here we are, we're talking about a straight-up scientist, an astrobiologist, and he's saying, well, the spacecraft looked like a magic wand as it was coming in.
I love it. Any trips coming up for you, William?
Actually, yes. I'm in the process right now of getting ready to go to Egypt in March for the total eclipse of the sun. and we'll be in Giza for that event, and I'm very much looking forward to that.
All right, well, you be safe out there, okay?
Okay, George.
William Henry, his website, williamhenry.net. williamhenry.net. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with physicist James McCanny. A little science here on the program tonight on Coast to Coast AM.